Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 20th, 2015. President Kiir tells lawmakers that he wants peace in the country as soon as possible.
My special appeal goes to our brothers and sisters in the rebellion to put South Sudan first and to be able to negotiate in good faith in order to reach peace agreement. I believe the crises are our own and we also own the solution.
One person is killed and two others are missing after violence erupted at a UN camp for internally displaced persons in Juba.
Almost about 9 people were beaten in a different location. Those who have beaten in checkpoint, exactly in the bus station, were about 5. And then they say there were other 4 being beaten between the checkpoint and custom.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir says he will continue doing everything in his power to ensure that peace is restored in South Sudan. Mr. Kiir made this vow in a speech to open the National Assembly's first session of 2015. Our reporter Mungume Debs Rakarinj was in Parliament for the President's speech and sent us this report.
Mr. Kiir said in his 30-minute address to the National Assembly that establishing unity between all South Sudanese is key to attaining peace.
I call upon all South Sudanese to put aside our internal differences and come together as one people of one nation to save our country. This country has taken millions of lives from us during the decades of struggle. In this regard, my special appeal goes to our brothers and sisters in the rebellion to put South Sudan first and to be able to negotiate in good faith in order to reach peace agreement. I believe the crises are our own and we also own the solutions to them.
The president said he has made huge compromises to bring 17 months of fighting to an end and ensure peace is restored in South Sudan. He lamented that he was blamed for the failure to reach peace at negotiations led by regional bloc IGAD.
I did not want to negotiate with Riek Machar or any rebel leader because if I reach deadlock with the rebels, where will the IGAD leaders, where will they refer to? They will have no fallback position. But I was seen to be actually not accepting peace to come to South Sudan. This is why I accepted to travel all the time to Addis Ababa. But finally, when we reach the deadlock with Riek Machar, now they have run out of agenda, and they have run out of whom should they consult. Because that was Riek Machar as the head of rebels, and me as the head of the government in South Sudan.
The warring sides in South Sudan have been holding peace talks for nearly 16 months now. A cessation of hostilities agreement signed in January last year was violated almost immediately, and recommitments to the ceasefire deal have not been respected. President Kiir called in his speech on the two sides to finally commit to and abide by a ceasefire. He says this would help to ensure safe access for agencies to the millions of people who are suffering in South Sudan because of the fighting. At least 4 million people have been displaced, including hundreds of thousands who have fled to neighboring countries since South Sudan erupted in violence in December 2013. The United Nations and relief agencies have warned of famine unless the fighting ends and people are able to return home and start cultivating their land. The fighting has also pushed up the prices of basic goods. Mr. Kiir encouraged South Sudanese to grow crops to counter soaring food prices in the country.
As the impact of crisis was very severe and left us with many problems, including food shortages, I therefore ask our citizens to embark on agriculture seriously starting from this season as the answer only to the challenges of food insecurity in the country.
Mr. Kir says the government has secured at least 1,000 tractors to boost farming. 27-year-old Florence Abba listened to Mr. Kir's speech. A single mother of three, Abba says politicians need to take meaningful action and end suffering of the people of South Sudan. She says the cost of living has increased so much since the fighting started. She's unsure how she'll pay for her children's school fees on the £600 she makes each month working as a cleaner at the offices of an NGO in Juba.
My worry is that if this thing happened like this, how am I going to survive? Me, I just take tea at the morning, and then I ate a supper, oil, because everything was bad, and I cannot afford. And even paying school fees for students now a problem.
But Abba has not lost all hope.
If the fees will be there, everything will be okay. So I beg my government, if he can make something to bring peace to our nation, it will be good. Because we are the government. And without us, there's nothing.
President Kerry's speech came days after violence outside a United Nations camp in Juba for internally displaced persons left at least one person dead. The fighting reportedly involved military personnel and displaced persons. Mr. Kir called on South Sudan's security personnel to work for the safety of all South Sudanese.
I ask all the security organs in the country to provide maximum security and good leadership always in protecting the lives of our citizens, equally regardless of their political affiliations and backgrounds.
The National Assembly is supposed to debate and pass the NGO bill that will regulate how NGOs operate in the country. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
One person is reported dead and two more are unaccounted for after violence broke out last week at the UN camp for internally displaced persons in Juba. Several people were injured in what some are calling random attacks that broke out after the incident. Byung Kabung, an IDP at the camp, says the violence erupted after two men dressed in military uniform arrived at the entrance to the protection of civilian site and asked to enter.
They were asked about what they need. And then one of them said he has a wife inside here, and that's why he came for her. And the second one said he came here because he need to buy some drugs because it was a ration day. And then they were told to go back, remove their military uniform, and came back in a civilian clothes. And then I think in the process, they refused to do to accept that by going back and then removing their clothes. And then I think those boys become angry at them, and they start insulting people also that we are soldiers, you don't respect us and whatsoever. On that process, I think one of them was beaten, and the second one ran away.
Kabuang says the violence quickly escalated. He says men in military uniform indiscriminately started beating people, including a woman Kabong identified as Nyadat.
Almost about 9 people were beaten in a different locations. Those who were beaten in checkpoint, exactly in the bus station, were about 5. And then they say there were other 4 being beaten between the checkpoint and customs.
Taban Coach Galwak is an IDP who lives at the UN camp. He says at around noon on Friday, he was walking back to the camp with some other IDPs when they were set upon and beaten up by military personnel.
I was beaten by some soldiers, and those were wearing khaki and those were wearing civilian clothes. They beat me and they left me. We were about 4. Those were beat in a severe condition, and I was beat, and then after they left us, we were taken to hospital in IMC in POC1 for medical care.
South Sudan Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer had another version of the incident. Aguer does not deny that military personnel were involved in the violence, but says they were pursuing unsuspected criminals.
What happened is the report that we got is that the IDPs came out of the camp and they killed one person. And as a result, the military police beat three who were involved in the incident or who were suspected to be the culprit. The issue is under the investigation of the joint operation.
The UNMISS camp in Juba hosts about 35,000 IDPs. Many of the camp's residents have been sheltering in UN camps since December 2013, when fighting broke out in Juba before rapidly spreading around the country. The fighting is still going on in parts of South Sudan. South Sudan in Focus has not independently verified the accusations made by either side in the incident, and efforts to contact a UNMISS spokesperson for comment on the violence were unsuccessful. We now go to Warab State, where officials have suspended all activities of the state's Chamber of Commerce over allegations of fraud. The authorities say that some chamber officials whose terms were about to expire were extorting money from local business people. The chamber officials say the accusations were politically motivated, as Santino Monud reports from Kwajok.
Officials in Kwajok say members of the Chamber of Commerce have been extracting illegal tax payments from traders in the state. Kwajok Mayor Ajek Ajek says local traders alerted him to their problem. They said it has been going on for the past 2 years, Ajek says.
The traders brought it to my attention with so many complaint letters, of which I have in my office, that they were being taxed, Chambers of Commerce. One is for £65, one is £41, and the other one is £20. So I called them again second time. I warned them that they would not collect in the market of Kwajok again. They didn't listen.
Ajak says he summoned leaders of the Shambati's office and ordered them to stop asking merchants to pay taxes to them. He says they did not listen. In fact, Ajak says Chamber officials told the mayor he should not be concerned by the tax because
they told me that, you know, we collect from the foreigners, so you should not worry about what we're doing. And I told them the only person that allowed and eligible to collect in town is the taxation or Minister of Finance or the municipality. And what I know so far, the Venetian Chambers of Commerce, they are not supposed to collect. They can collect from the traders, business group, but that yearly annual association fees.
Mayor Ajak also alleged that many of the chamber members' terms in office have already expired. He says that means they were falsely representing themselves to the merchants.
The association contract for them to operate here in Kwajok as a chamber of commerce have expired, and they were just there temporarily. They're supposed to do election in January, but they never actually said and did the elections. And when I told them that they need to do an elections, or I will terminate this if they still do activities which are illegal in town. So based on all those evidence, I came to conclusion to send my deputy and told them that the Chambers of Commerce in Warab State in Kwajok City would be terminated until further noted.
Ken Mayar is acting chairman of Warab State Chamber of Commerce. He says his office does not collect taxes, and especially not several times a month.
What we do is we collect membership subscription fees. With membership fees, if you say you decide to pay yearly, we accept. And if you say you shall be paying per month, we also accept. And that is what we collect every month. We also collect traders' identification fees and nothing more.
Okay, says the mayor MOPS is politically motivated. He says Ajak is siding with a group of traders who want to take power in the chamber. Last year, a group of traders passed a no-confidence vote in the Chamber of Commerce, accusing its members of corruption and failing to organize elections.
There are politics that led to the closure of the office in December. The mayor was with a group that wants to take over the office by force. But we are not politicians, and we are not the army. People may fear a coup, but what we do is sit and elect members to look after our things.
But some merchants in Kwajong Market say they do pay money each month to people claiming to be associated with the Chamber of Commerce. Yaya Yusip operates a shop in Kwajong Market. He says he and other traders were told that the fees are for rubbish collection and security patrols.
In a month, the rubbish collectors take from us £31 and market security patrols take £41. In total, it is £72.
Some are blaming the war of wit between Kwajong town officials and the Chamber of Commerce for increase in local market prices. Traders have begun selling one piece of bread for one South Sudanese pound, when in the past, consumers could get two pieces of bread for the same price. But prices are rising around South Sudan, and it isn't clear if the price hikes in Kwajong are due to the so-called taxes that are allegedly being imposed by the Chamber of Commerce. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manut Ayuel in Kwajong.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese react to President Kiir's speech to lawmakers. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you have problems getting enough food for your family?
There is a problem. One of it is there is shortage of food. The dollars has gone high and things are now expensive.
No, not at all. I try my best to provide food for them in the morning, in the afternoon and the evening. And I also do my best that the food I provide is enough for them to eat.
Yeah, there are a lot of problems because we are many of us in our family. So to find food is something that is very difficult.
I don't have a problem getting enough food for the family. I know how to go about getting them and I prepare ahead for when I would need food.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. President Kiir's speech got mixed reaction from politicians and analysts. Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
The director of Juba University's Center for Peace and Development Studies, Luka Byong Deng, says the president's speech shows that he is committed to the peace process. But Byong says other senior government officials need to be brought on board to help reach permanent peace.
We are aware that the president is committed to the peace agreement, but not necessarily everybody is committed because there are some people who are spoilers.
Byong says the so-called spoilers include ministers who have suggested that the government does not want the United States, Norway and the United Kingdom to be part of IGAD-led peace talks. The three Western countries make up what's called the Troika for South Sudan. Byong says Mr. Kiir made clear in his speech that
these are really the friends of South Sudan. We hope they should be disciplined, that the other senior people in the government should adhere to this commitment.
Byong says the government should be ready for some hard bargaining when the peace talks resume.
I think we are entering now into a very difficult phase, a phase that is, if it is not handled properly, we may be entering into a confrontation with the region and with the international community. The sanctions are still hovering on us. The report of the African Union Commission of Inquiry is still not yet being out, and it's also something going to face us.
Byong says President Kiir cannot bring peace alone, and he says he hopes the SPLM in opposition will also be serious about ending the conflict. The head of the SPLM-DC opposition party, Lam Akol Ajawin, says it's the duty of Mr. Kiir's government to protect everyone in South Sudan. He says asking the security forces to ensure people's safety is not enough. He says members of the security forces are using state power to intimidate and harass people. Akol, who is also the head of the National Alliance, an umbrella group of opposition parties, cites a recent example when unidentified security personnel arrested and detained the leader of the recently formed People's Liberal Party, Peter Mayen Majongdeet.
So the government must be serious about ensuring that all the citizens of this country enjoy their constitutional and legal rights, the rights of free expression, the right of free association and other human rights. This is the work of the government. So if anybody, any organ of the government is not complying, we want to see steps. We want to see the government punishing people who are exceeding their powers in application of the law. It is then that we'll believe that the government is serious.
During his speech, President Kiir noted the food shortages and high prices of commodities across the country. He urged citizens to grow food to feed themselves and touted the fact that the government has bought 1,000 tractors to help the farming effort. Lam Akol says tractors alone will not alleviate persistent food shortages in South Sudan. He says instead of importing tractors, the government's priority should be to develop an agricultural policy.
What you need to do first is to develop that policy. And as a result of that policy, you see what kind of instruments you need to use in order to bring about the agricultural revolution that you want. You buy tractors and you go to areas where you don't have fuel. They will just become souvenirs, things to be looked at. You buy a tractor to a place where the area may be around 100 padans, is a waste. So you need to know exactly where do you want to take the tractors to. It's not a question of bringing any number of tractors, dividing them equally or whatever to the estates. They will never produce even their cost. So I don't believe that this is the priority.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Reporter Philip Thornalew contributed to this story. Local chiefs in western Bahar el-Ghazal state are being accused of land grabbing. Officials in that state say a number of recreational grounds, public roads, and other areas intended for public use have already been illegally acquired by the chiefs. Demos Silva Aurelio has this report from WOW.
Officials with the Ministry of Physical Infrastructure in Western Bahar el-Ghazal called a meeting today to address what they call a growing problem, land grabbing. The officials say local chiefs have illegally acquired land using deeds that the chiefs themselves issue. Ministry officials say houses have sprung up on land that is supposed to be used to serve the community. The ministry says the illegal practice of land grabbing is hampering efforts to provide resettlement and farming land to almost 5,000 applicants, most of them returnees from Khartoum. Romano Uchu is the Director General of the state's Ministry of Physical Infrastructure. He says land grabbing has been a problem since last year. He says the perpetrators are sometimes high-level local officials and even soldiers. They acquire the land and build homes on it. Sometimes they build a residence in the most improbable places, he says.
All open spaces and roads have been grabbed. When we ask, we are told it was the army. This has happened in areas of Bara Sheki, Awel Jadid, where the railway runs. Likewise in Jebel Akdar.
Apinyi Samuel is chairman of the Abunj Bunj Block E Land Committee in WOW. He says what the Ministry of Physical Infrastructure is calling a land grab problem is really just a misunderstanding. He says the ministry has been sending surveyors to demarcate land without notifying the chiefs and the local authorities.
You find that a survey takes place without the notice of the chairperson of the committee, without the notice of the chief or the chief in that very high. So you find that at the end of the day, there is actually a misunderstanding. We, at the place there, we have to question them. Why do you come and work without considering us? In case you want to go to the ground and do something, you need to consult us, and we have to give you all the necessary information on ground.
The State Minister of Physical Infrastructure and Urban Construction, Zakaria Joseph Garang, says any chief or member of the armed forces who is found issuing license or constructing on illegally acquired land will be arrested and tried in court.
They are interfering with our work. They either distribute land illegally or they hinder our work. As now, we cannot demarcate land in most areas from January until now. So from today, you don't have a hand on land issues. And any chief involved in land issues will be arrested.
South Sudan's 2009 Land Act says that all land in the country belongs to communities and the government regulates its use and acquisition. Officials at the meeting today agreed to set up a joint committee involving all stakeholders, including people who were evicted from their property after it was acquired by someone else, to try to resolve the problem of land grabbing. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in WOW.
And lastly but not least, South Sudan has a presence in today's Boston Marathon. Gor Madingwa Kerr, who finished 49 in the marathon at the 2012 London Olympics, lined up with the elite men at the starting line of the 119 Boston Marathon. You might remember that Kerr had a fallout with South Sudanese Athletics Federation over a training stipend he was granted by the International Olympic Committee. The marathon runner was told back in January that he should hand over the training money to the federation or they would suspend him. He did not give the money, so in Boston, he is not running for South Sudan, but for the state of New Hampshire. Caroline Rotich of Kenya won the women's race in the time of 2 hours, 24 minutes and 55 seconds, and Lelisa De Sisa of Ethiopia won the men's race in 2 hours, 90 minutes and 17 seconds. Makair was not in the men's lead group, but was just getting into Boston Marathon. But getting into Boston Marathon is an achievement. International and humanitarian agencies are calling for swift action to prevent the deaths of migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea from North Africa to Europe. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This latest disaster occurred late Saturday when a boat crammed with up to 900 migrants capsized near Libya. Only a few dozen survivors have been rescued. International Organization for Migration spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA search and rescue missions are continuing.
The waters are calm and the weather is fair right now. The authorities believe that there remains a chance to find people. You know, it's a big sea out there, and it's easy not to see people. But generally, if someone's missing, they're drowned. That's been our experience, although there also are cases where some bodies are recovered.
The International Organization for Migration reports the death toll this year is more than 1,500, compared with 96 during the first 4 months of 2014. The majority of migrants making this perilous journey are from sub-Saharan Africa, Eritrea, Somalia, and Syria. European Union ministers are discussing possible solutions in Luxembourg. The International Organization for Migration is asking the European Union to once again back life-saving operations on the scale of the Italian-run Mare Nostrum program. That program rescued thousands of migrants at sea, but was shut down last year on the grounds it encouraged people to risk their lives on smugglers' boats. IOM spokesman Millman says governments must become creative in their search for solutions.
We know places like Agadez and Niger that are full of people on their way to Tripoli. Khartoum is full of people on their way to Tripoli. These are very traditional points along the migrant route, and we believe that organizations could be there with a desk and a computer set up and saying, we are going to start registering people. We're going to start seeing who has family in one of these countries in Europe, who could qualify for a humanitarian visa, who could be resettled on a temporary basis with their family.
Millman acknowledges opening such a channel could provoke a stampede of migrants. But given the choice between temporary legal entry to a country and mass slaughter on the seas, he says a stampede is probably the better choice. The smugglers' trade is flourishing in Libya because it is a failed, lawless state. The United Nations is mediating peace talks in that strife-torn country in an effort to reach a power-sharing agreement among the warring parties that could bring stability and curb human smuggling. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that report by Lisa Schlein brings us to the end of our show for today. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Please join us again tomorrow evening.